Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I want to welcome the Minister for Environment, Community and Local Government and Cabinet Minister Phil Hogan, TD. You're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Kilkenny and Carlow, an area that actually represented for now 21 years.
Yes, I went to become a member of the Upper House, the Senate, in 1987, and became a member of Dáil Éireann in 1989, and they haven't found me out yet anywhere in Carlow, Kilkenny, so still there and delighted to be a member of Kilkenny's Cabinet.
Now, I do want to ask you, you know, and it's hard for me to be serious about the your portfolio, but you definitely must have pulled the shortest straw, because it really places a tremendous amount of responsibility on you from day one. Anything that includes, reforming government, taking a new approach to politics in Ireland, you'd hardly give that to God. It was it's a very difficult concept.
It is, and it has been a difficult time, obviously, when you have to do the necessary reforms in our political structures and in the way we deliver services at local level and as how we fund them through local charges or taxation. All of these issues then are quite difficult at a time when we're in a bailout program with the European Union and when we have a dysfunctional financial institutions. So when you put everything together, it has been a difficult time. But you should never waste a good recession, they say, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you have a period of difficulty in your country, is the time to get changes made. So we have made an enormous amount of change in the last 2.5 years in terms of changing the way we have local politics and local services delivered at local level. And we have embraced the community in terms of making sure that the citizen is at the centre of policy, is at the centre of decision making, and that they're paying now for the services, so therefore they expect a better quality service. As that's the case in New York, and that's the case all over the world, but we've got a little bit, accustomed to having central government doing everything for us at local level over the last 35 years in particular.
Well, I don't think you would have to, explain to anybody on our side of the Atlantic, the intricacies of trying to deal, in the words of our own Mayor Bloomberg, do more for less. That does not have a good ring to it. And
no.
But actually, Ireland, maybe could have gone in another direction, could have, eased the pain over 10 years or 15 years, but the decision to tackle this head on was indeed a very welcome and necessary undertaking by the government.
Yeah,
and
at the end of the day, Adrian, there's not any easy way of actually telling people, that we have been borrowing beyond our means, spending beyond our means, and that we're broke. And we had to get assistance from people in the EU and the IMF and the European Central Bank. And we were lucky that we had a plan B to fall back on people that would give us the necessary resources to keep our services going, keep our people employed in the public services, our teachers and our police people and our, all of the various public services that we often take for granted. And at the end of the day, the Taoiseach Enda Kenny and the Cabinet, have to, grit their teeth and, with the help of the Irish people then, take the unpalatable decisions and, cut out some programmes, reduce others and charge for other programmes.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that the Irish people were great in the way that they didn't go out in the street like other countries. They just, in the typically Irish way, they said, let's get through this. And we got a mandate to do that in the last general election to make the hard decisions. There wasn't any wild promises made because there was no money. And we are now seeing the hope is now becoming a reality whereby unemployment is falling. We're certainly now much more competitive as a country. We have higher levels of exports than we've had in 20 years.
Yes.
And also we have a higher number of jobs now being created from foreign direct investment from companies in the United States and companies in the Far East who are prepared to use Ireland as the base for the European Union market. And we are now seeing the benefits of those hard decisions. And albeit people have suffered a bit in terms of mortgage distress and reduction in their incomes, but hopefully there will a time come in the near future where we'll be able to restore some of that lost income to the families that have suffered.
Right. Now, Minister, very unlike America, where, you know, we still hold grievances and grudges to previous administrations and, you know, who might have done things better. Your government had a very good reason to at least, you know, say we've landed with this mess and it's not our fault. That was not in the agenda. As a matter of fact, it was very noticeable from Americans here. Is, well, why, you know, these guys didn't create the horrific mess, and yet, you know, they seem to not place or live, you know, the reality of the matter that this was actually not created, you know, by the new government, and for that matter, it wasn't created by, you know, the taxpayer who was left to pick up the pieces.
At the end of the day, what Irish people want is they want to know where we're going for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we can always look back and we can whinge a little bit about who caused what, but that's not going to solve the problem. And the people in the last elections in Ireland in 2011, they went out of their way to give a strong mandate to a government where Fine Gael and Labour, 113 seats out of 166, to get on with the job of solving the financial problem of the country, getting our country back to work, and restoring our reputation, which had been tarnished. And that's what the government is doing, and now we can see the fruits of that. We're going to have a budget next week. It's going to be probably, hopefully, the last of the difficult ones. And we expect to get out of the programme of assistance, in other words, the bailout programme, by the end of the year, and restore our economic and financial independence. And that will make, I think, Irish people very proud of the fact that their democratically elected government was able to do that. And that there wasn't in any way the social unrest that we see in other countries. We got on with the job, unlike others. And hopefully the Irish people then will bear the fruit of that in terms of extra economic activity, extra financial resources in their pockets in the years ahead.
Can you break down for us your portfolio? Minister for the Environment.
Yes.
Community and local government.
Well, environment is about the quality of life that you have in your community. You have many things that we take for granted, like air quality.
Mm-hmm.
So I can bring in policies in order to deal with what type of air quality we should have and aspire to have, in the ingredients you have in issues like smoky coal. I've brought in a ban from 2016 now. You know, that you will not be allowed to sell or market smoky coal products in Ireland, and you have to find alternative sources of fuel. So that's good for your health, and good for people that have asthma in particular, and there's a fair few of those in Port Mayo and Kilkenny,
right.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
The other issue then on the environment side is that climate change is a big issue, and as you saw from the Hurricane Sandy, and people are a lot more aware of it now in terms of the you know, the pressures from climate change in terms of how they impact on ordinary people. And you know, I attend a lot of conferences and meetings, which a lot of them, you know, would do an awful lot for the, I suppose, for hot air in terms of air quality. But nevertheless, there are important subjects of a global nature that are discussed. And when Ireland was president of the European Union in the first 6 months of this year, we had to lead the charge for the European Union with other countries like the United States to try and broker a deal. And we all aspire to a good deal on that in terms of reducing our emissions by 2015. So that will be probably decided in the United Nations here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the community side then. That's a department that former Minister Eamon O'Queeve had before it was restructured.
Mm-hmm.
And that community division deals with helping rural communities in terms of putting in basic rural infrastructure, like community centres, like village renewal. And then it has another dimension in the urban areas about community development programmes for to give people a lift in urban areas, and give the, you know, programmes of intervention for disadvantaged areas in particular. And then the local government is about, there's about 9 or 10 basic services that people take for granted often that are actually being implemented by local councils. And I'm restructuring the system where I'm bringing the number of local authorities in Ireland from 114 down to 31, reducing the number of public representatives, reducing the number of staff, and delivering a better quality, effective service. Now, and they have to pay at local level now rather than national level for the provision of those services. So whether it is water or waste or parks and all of the amenities of the community, the closest to the citizen obviously is going to be where there's going to be the biggest impact. So if you're paying property tax, mm-hmm. or if you're paying for water, you're going to mind the money that you have, but also hopefully get a better and a most effective service. And they're the main headline areas yes. that I have given my political time for the last 2.5 years to reform.
But also, I'm sure that, and these are obviously very necessary, but the hue and cry from, you know, from anywhere is people say, you know, we're broke, we have no money, we you know, why not shove that on? Wait till everything settles down. Wait until, you know,
that's a natural reaction.
Natural reaction.
And I can understand that as a yeah. practicing politician for 30 years. I can understand there's always going to be another day, but there's never a nirvana. Yeah. And you cannot, you're only making the situation a lot worse by waiting. And, you know, if you want to have a country that we can be proud of and the best country to do business, particularly for small businesses in the world, you have to make these changes. Because water, for example, we have a system of water supply in Ireland at the moment where 35% of it is going out through a broken, leaking pipe system that hasn't been replaced for hundreds of years. We're depending on the national taxation system to pay for all of the improvements to that.
Mm-hmm.
We won't have that money. So we're trying to get the private sector to work with the public sector to deliver more money in the system so that we will have a competitive advantage in Ireland for jobs. Water, there's going to be world wars fought over water in the years mm-hmm. ahead. And Ireland has plenty of rainfall, but we have to harvest that mm-hmm. and we have to have a good quality water system for companies like Intel now are going to double in size in the next 5 to 10 years. One of the things they want and what they'll ask you all the time is, what's your quality of water like? You know, all the pharmaceutical industries, of which there are many here based in New Jersey, a lot of them headquartered here, they need good quality water. So we're going to make sure that over the next 7 or 10 years we reform the system, that not just they'll have good quantities, but good quality of water for foreign direct investment and jobs for the Irish people.
Contrary to what was predicted when your government took over, inward investment into Ireland, particularly from North America, the United States of America, actually increased. And one would have to imagine that that was possibly one of the worst periods in economic history of Ireland. That took a lot of, you know, of faith and hope. But also, I think we ought to recognize that a lot of the ties between Ireland and America, and in particular in the Irish-American connections, that had to do, you know, had a lot of influence in terms of doing it. Not indeed that Americans would give anything away if this wasn't a gift to Ireland.
Well, as you know, nobody in business decides to set up a new facility anywhere in the world unless it makes sense for that company.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they're going to be sure that it's going to be a success. So when we took over government in 2011, all of the talk at the time was, would the euro survive?
Mm-hmm.
So we have brought about a situation now with our leadership of the European Union, as well as the leadership shown by the Taoiseach and the Kenyan government
yes.
in relation to Ireland, that we have stability in our currency, stability in all of the areas that are important for a business setting up in Ireland. We now are, you know, we're at the gateway to the European Union mm-hmm. market of 500 million people. And companies that want to set up and take advantage of that marketplace now have a country in Ireland which is one of the most competitive in the world, where there's a lot of clustering of existing services around pharma and all of the various companies like
right.
Google and Twitter mm-hmm. And Facebook. They're all clustering now in Dublin and in Ireland generally mm-hmm. for to take advantage of the huge skills base that we have in Ireland
yes.
and the reduction in cost that we brought about in the last 3 years and the market opportunities they have in the European Union and beyond.
I think to offset something that we constantly hear and that we have indeed that is real, in that Ireland has we've returned to a crisis with immigration, with those who simply have to leave. They have to leave Ireland. And that is true. I think what probably we don't know is that Ireland, for I believe it's the last like 15 months or so, has created jobs. 3,000 jobs
a month,
which is incredible at this this stage.
When you look at it, Adrian, that in 2009 to 2011, over that 3-year period, 250,000 jobs in the private sector were lost in Ireland, which is mightn't seem a lot of jobs in American standards, but it's a huge amount of jobs in relation to Ireland, where the level of unemployment doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the skills that we had built up over the years through our education system, that people in an involuntary way had to go again and emigrate to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
That has now turned around, and in the last year, we're creating 3,000 jobs a month extra in the private sector. So that's hugely important from the point of view of the confidence of the country, and it demonstrates really the sentiment that's there internationally. And I think that great credit must go to the Taoiseach Enda Kenny, who is well travelled in the United States,
mm-hmm.
who has, I suppose, banged the drum in relation to Ireland being open for business. And he and Richard Bruton and the Taoiseach to Eamon Gilmore, who was here last week, they're all out and about marketing Ireland on the basis of the strengths that we have and the opportunities that a country like Ireland with its labour force can give to companies from the United States who want to set up and take advantage of the European Union market. So, it hasn't come overnight. But the first thing we had to do was have a solid currency and stability in our currency and our
mm-hmm.
economy, and also that we have developed a reputation again within the European Union that, that we are able to deal with the political issues of the day, have our economic sovereignty restored to us again and our independence restored, and be able to do business with the major companies of the world that we've just mentioned, some of them.
When you were in New York last week, you attended several events, which and whoever took care of your schedule didn't leave you much time for shopping. But one of the obviously representing at the Flax Trust, again very important, very significant, and it also very appropriate because
when you're coming to New York and you have your Consul General Noel Kilkenny organizing your schedule, you don't expect to be idle. And certainly it is a great opportunity for visiting ministers to be able to be brought, to places that
mm-hmm.
that he has worked with and, introduced to people that the Consul General has worked with over the last 3 years in building up contacts and networks with the Irish community, but also beyond that.
Right.
And going to the Flax Trust lunch has certainly given me an opportunity as a government minister to say, to thanks to the people that have, contributed enormously to reconciliation on the island of Ireland, and to recognise people
right.
like Don Keogh and John Leahy, and
He insists, by the way, he's a Leahy when he was over here, and has not through no fault of his own. We know he was a Leahy, but when he got over here,
I had that conversation with Noel Kilkenny about the pronunciation, and he's Leahy in Ireland, but he's Leahy here. We understand it's the same
and
thing.
He had no problem, mind you, when he was in Ireland and when he was graciously received by Taoiseach Enda Kenny, and that in fact he knew that as he was being greeted throughout Ireland, if anyone insisted on calling him Leahy, he let it go.
Exactly.
That's
only the Irish could get away with that. But Bill Flynn and John Sharkey and people like that really have made a huge contribution, quietly, some of them, to behind the scenes, to making sure that the peace dividend that we're getting now on the island of Ireland is cemented for the future. And it's nice to be able to go to a lunch to recognise that and to thank them for it.
you know, also as, you know, attending the Ireland U.S. Chamber of Commerce event, getting to see, again, as many people as you have within the communities might bring us to, you know, something that you got to see firsthand and when you went to Far Rockaway, and indeed when you went down to PS 104.
Yes.
Well, you didn't go empty-handed.
No, well, it was a privilege to go down and hear the stories from Principal Katie Grady and all of our staff down there and our parents and pupils about what happened in Hurricane Sandy, how they're still being impacted down there. In fact, the principal has not got back to her house yet after 11 months. So it's, you know, it's a horrendous story, and you have to feel for the communities. But the Irish are well got in New York, and we have received a lot over the years from all of the people of New York, not just from Irish America. And it was an opportunity for me to go to the Bayswater School down in Far Rockaways, not just to an Irish community like you would expect, but to another community in that school, and to say we feel your pain. You have actually been part and parcel of a very severe jolt in their lives and in their communities, and we had a modest contribution to make financially towards supporting the school and their equipment to bring them back to, you know, some semblance of normality again. And typically of the Irish, that we don't distinguish between, you know, the projects. We just see it as a good project, and we try and help out the communities and individuals in it.
Yeah, and also the Rockaways and Breezy Point, and for that matter, Far Rockaway has traditionally been an Irish conclave.
Mm.
The school you visited, the check you delivered, for $25,000 is to a school which is 98% non-white.
That's great.
And yet, that is an extension of the Mehel right after Hurricane Sandy.
That's right.
I think most of us were in such shock that we didn't and would not know where to start.
Yes.
First of all, there was very poor communication. There was no way of knowing what was going on, except that we heard of tragedy on top of tragedy. The Irish government, and particularly through Consul General here in New York, Noel Kilkenny, and indeed his Deputy Consul, Peter Ryan, took that situation and took control from the very beginning in coordinating great efforts. And we saw not only Irish people, but their neighbours and everybody, you know, and the Irish immigrant services agencies, you know, gather, get there, and really pitch into wherever they were needed. They weren't waiting for a brogue. They didn't go to houses with, you know, that had shamrocks on the windows if there were any windows left. They did something that we had not seen, or indeed many would hardly believe, were it not for the horrific, horrendous crisis.
The Irish, I suppose, over the years at home, you would have been used to the community spirit, where everybody came together, you know, especially when we were a lot less wealthy or well off than we have over the last, you know, couple of generations. But, you know, over the years, Ireland has always come together in a neighbourly way to help our neighbours in order to overcome adversity. This was a huge jolt for people in their communities to deal with. And I think I agree with you. Great credit is due to the Consul General and his team for ensuring that the coordination that they were able to bring towards making sure that people were looked after. I could feel it a few days ago when I was down there in Far Rockaways, that the spirit of Mehel was very much alive and well in that community. But equally, they were getting the leadership from the Irish government through the Consul General and the Deputy Consul General in making sure that they were able to cope with this awful tragedy in their lives and in their communities more quickly.
You also visited, of course, the Freedom Tower in
which many of us have been lining up for, but you did, in fact, see that Freedom Tower, and
yes.
It's
a fabulous place,
First Minister, you know, to get to see it completed, and what was your reaction to that?
Well, this is a very solemn place, you know. Yeah. I visited there shortly after the events of 9/11, and to see the steel crosses and to see the carnage, I suppose, of not just on the human side but also on the capital side of what is there in Ground Zero, and to go back then and see the massive construction activity, but at the same time tastefully looking after the memories that so many families who lost their loved ones there has been taken into account, and I think you know Bill Baroni and his team down there deserve great credit for the sensitivity that they're showing in a very difficult situation, at the same time making a major investment towards bringing back Lower Manhattan and that particular area generally back to its former glory.
Minister, finally, as the Taoiseach in his interview with us last week emphasized, the Irish government is in the midst of all your own efforts for economic recovery, has not stopped during the period since your government took over, has not stopped funding to, I'm sure, to the chagrin of some people who would say, listen, we, you know, if there's any money to be spent, it should be spent at home. However, Irish agencies, the Irish government continues to fund immigrant service agencies right across America. And indeed, the Irish government once more has, in addition to what they have been doing, and that is supporting us financially, supporting us through the consulates, through the varied organizations where the government has maintained, like never before, I think, this very strong contact, this international development. The government has undertaken something that many other governments might shy away from, lest they be told that they're interfering in U.S. policy. But the Irish government has taken a very strong position in terms of, you know, in an active capacity, getting, again, that coordination which we saw in the Mehel to actually make sure that basically Irish government is saying, we want to see immigration reform. We're not looking for, and that this, in fact, yes, we're concerned about, you know, the more than 50,000 undocumented who, through no fault of their own, have been here. But we also want to see reform so that we can not only take care of the undocumented, but yes, we are interested in making sure that in fact immigrants in Ireland don't have to just go to Australia, and if rumors is halfway correct, that's going to peter out fairly soon. They don't have to go somewhere, but in the rightful place should be able to come to America. For the Irish government to say, listen, we need, you know, let there be no mistake. We're not, you know, hiding behind this. We want this to happen.
Ms. Arthur, yes. And I hope that the diplomatic effort made by the Taoiseach in the Kenny and Eamon Gilmore as tarnished in recent times will actually bear fruit, and that the impasse that we have in Washington will be overcome, and that it will be prioritized to a greater extent than it is at the moment, the notion of immigration reform, to resolve a long-standing issue for so many people and to give certainty to their lives and to give certainty to their families at home as well, that when they are here that they're you know, they're here as legitimate Irish Americans.
Right.
Like, we have a great relationship built up over centuries between Ireland and America.
Mm-hmm.
We value that relationship enormously. We will never forget the help and the enormous help that Irish America has given to Ireland at a time of adversity. And even in recent years, where I'm sure that Irish companies could have set up anywhere in the world,
yeah,
they looked sympathetically and how and favourably in many cases on setting up in Ireland, where they had a connection with Ireland, in particular at board level and indeed within the company. It's certainly, I think, hard-nosed business people, even though they don't do things for the sake mm-hmm. of just doing it. They looked at the opportunities that we would give to give Ireland a lift out of our adversity and out of our present difficulties. And I want to thank Irish America. And I saw it firsthand with the Flax Trust. I saw it firsthand at the 25th anniversary of the Irish Chamber of Commerce USA, with Maurice Buckley swinging into action, and Brian O'Dwyer, and all of the various people that were there, honouring key people that had made such a contribution to Irish America, Dr. Smurfit, Colin McLaughlin, Gary McCann, Kingsley Cuckoo, and Mark Pickett. All of those people are making a huge difference, financially and otherwise, in order to ensure that all of the support that's there and connectivity is continued. And one final initiative, say, Adrian, to you, that mm-hmm. we have a new initiative on the community development side in Ireland, where we now have an organisation set up that's, you know, under the IDA, Connect Ireland. So it means that if you have somebody in Mayo or Kilkenny or anywhere, mm-hmm. and it's in Ireland, or if you have somebody in a company here in the US who wants to set up in Ireland, and they bring it to the attention of Connect Ireland, and all the details are on the website, that we will be in a position to help people and give them a finder's fee for helping us to set up that small business in Ireland. IDA and Enterprise Ireland are doing a great job, but they can't do everything. So we depend on the Irish diaspora and the Irish Americans who are in boardrooms and are as employees to say the good word about Ireland, and Connect Ireland is another way in which we can help ourselves economically. So it's a privilege to meet all of those people on my visit here and to see the interaction and the interrelationships being deepened, you know, more and more every time I come here.
Even though I said finally, let me tell you that we are very proud here, and indeed we would like to get some credit here for responding to Ireland's greatest year ever in tourism. And that has turned out to be
a huge success. And there was a lot of people, I suppose, that didn't know how it was going to work out. I'm sure Tourism Ireland didn't either. But we have one of the highest numbers of people from North America visiting our country this year. And the gathering has been an enormous success. And I would say to the people that have been in Ireland this year, spread the good word that we have good weather back again. We have competitive hospitality,
yeah,
and it would be great that the gathering could continue for the next couple of years as well, based on the very pleasant experience I'm sure that many Americans had in Ireland this year.
I wouldn't want to be the one to call the ending of the gathering.
We could have a post-gathering in 2014.
I tell you, you can't stop a runaway train.
That's good.
Minister, thank you very much for being with us, and indeed, enjoy. Indeed, we hope that when you come back again, that perhaps you could do that. And pick another route. I wouldn't let Consul General Noel Kilkenny park my car in this town, which left.
Oh, well, you see, the Clare people have to win in the All-Ireland. They're the bosses this year, and as a Kilkenny man,
I
have to take a little bit of a backseat this year. So he's in charge in 2013.
Absolutely, and as a male person, I maintain that we're getting sick and tired of the will of God, and that this will change very soon.
Thank you.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.